Welcome once again, esteemed listeners of Outstanding Radio through your smart device, your Alexa, other smart speaker, or maybe not so smart speaker. Maybe you're listening in the car, at the gym like I do, or just hanging out and chilling, which is fine also. No matter what the circumstance might be of your listenership, you will not be disappointed if you heed your ears for the next 45 minutes. Heed what you will about to hear through aforementioned listening device. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WGH Talk Radio, where we provide a variety of opinions, viewpoints, perspectives, and most importantly, humor. On this program, we sometimes talk politics, sometimes talk technology, sometimes just talk about life. Something tells me this will be one of those programs that will be a combination of the above, making it one of the best radio experiences of all time. Joined by my frequent brother in broadcasting, mate of the microphone, living in his own private Idaho, that's Mr. Calvin Williams. We have a special guest who has never shared the microphones with us before, but that's okay. This gentleman might be a newbie, but he's a goodie. A newbie but goodie, as they say. Now, Calvin, he is a friend of yours, and I would like you to introduce him. He has a rather interesting name. I guess that's part of the fun, if someone's name is kind of fascinating. No offense, Calvin, but you have a very common last name. But Calvin's a good name. You don't hear that too often. Kind of think about Coolidge. Silent Cal, of course, you are not so Silent Cal. So go ahead and take over the microphone right now, Calvin, and tell us about our esteemed guest with the interesting name, and tell us what we shall be talking about for the next 42 minutes or so.
So, yes, the guest that I have today is a friend of mine that I've known since we went to the Southwestern Career Academy together. His name, and yes, this is his real name, is Chevy Sargent. And how fitting, he was in the automotive program at the Career Academy, auto body to be specific, and today's show is going to be on the topic of car talk, since we're kind of drifting away from the topics of tech talk and politics for a little bit. We had our most recent show with my guests, and we were discussing movies and Hollywood culture. If you haven't listened to it yet, I highly suggest you go into the archives and give it a listen. But today, Chevy joins us at the microphone to talk about various automotive-related topics.
You know, cars, like computers, they evolve, and they can be rather high-tech. They're essentially, at this point, a circuit board and microprocessors and smart gadgetry on four wheels. I did speak about my ride through the city with my two friends in their self-driving Tesla. We might discuss that again, something that was kind of unheard of even a generation ago. Of course, whether cars becoming so high-tech is good or bad is certainly a point to debate. I miss my manual shifting vehicles I've had in the past, but admittedly, you can't have a lot of this fancy-dancy technology if you're shifting gears on your own. Maybe our guest Chevy will discuss that. You know, I figured, Calvin, that if your friend's name was Chevy Sargent, and I'm sure he's tired of hearing this, we'd either be discussing the military or discussing cars. And maybe we could discuss cars used in the military and maybe the applications that these smart vehicles may have in keeping things safe. So perhaps there is something there. So go ahead, Chevy, and introduce yourself a little bit and tell us why you are so uniquely qualified to talk about automobiles and automotive technology with us on this program.
Well, I guess you could say it all started when I was born.
Well, that's a good time to start, isn't it?
Yeah, so you know, I come from a car background. My parents were car people. They always loved cars. My mom had Camaros when she was a kid. My dad had Camaros and square bodies and all kinds of cool stuff when he was growing up. And you know, the name kind of just came to him when I was born. They didn't really have a name, popped up, so there I was. And my last name's my family name, so Sargent's on my dad's side. So I can't say I got any feedback on military stuff there, but As far as cars and things go, I kind of grew up around automobiles, and being a lower income household, my family was always the type that wrenched on their own cars. So my dad, he was the type that fixed everything just to get it by, get it to the next week, and he'd buy them cheap, fix them cheap, and run them till he couldn't no more. And that's kind of where I picked up on it. Grew up wrenching with him, and he taught me a lot about what he knew.
So kind of a car flipper, not to be confused with a real estate flipper. Buy cars, fix them up, and make a profit or repurpose them in some fashion.
Well, so he, not always, so a lot of times it was just really just for his commuter. So like we had a lot of old junky cars, and he would just keep them on the road and get them to his day job. But occasionally, you know, you'd fix one or here and there and put it off. But a lot of times it was just keeping them on the road just to get by. And, you know, me, on the other hand, I was always interested in it just for like the hobby aspect of it. And I'll get into that with my projects and how I kind of led down this path as we progress here.
Yeah, cars are really a unique slice of Americana. Maybe you remember the commercials that said, "We love baseball, apple pie, and of course, Chevrolet," which could refer to you
or
could refer to the car. Guess we'll leave people in suspense. I do see, Chevy, that you have your own business and website called Sargent Restoration, revolving ruined class, reviving. That's what's fun about live radio. If you mess a word up, you can giggle and joke about it and realize it was kind of funnier before you fix the error. But we will quote it as it says so on your website, reviving ruined classics, one bolt at a time. Where I see there's a Camaro that has seen better days, yet in the middle of the picture is a shiny, spanking, brand new Camaro. Or it could be a Firebird, since they're essentially the same car, but I think it's one or the other. Of course, right. I might be wrong. It looks Camaro-ish to me, but I'm hardly the car expert you are. I do enjoy, though, these old-school American muscle cars. You don't hear much about them anymore, but those who enjoy these cars definitely are very... very faithful to their hobby and to the wheels that they like to put in their driveway. Your website says, "We don't just sell parts, we bring rides back from the grave." That could be interesting if we did that to humans. Adam here on the Talking Place with my usual mate of the microphone, Calvin Williams, and our special guest, Mr. Chevy Sargent. Remind us, Chevy, also, maybe you mentioned this earlier, where do you hang your hat? That is, where you live?
I am from Columbus, Ohio. It's where I grew up, born and raised, and that's where I still currently reside.
Oh, Columbus, Ohio, the second largest city in the Midwest. A fine town for sure. What part of, are you in the Grove City area like Calvin was in, or what part of town are you in, if I can be so nosy?
I'm on the brink of it, so I'm the southwestern side, so still within Columbus, but I do all my shopping in Grove City, so I can say that.
Good old Groovy City. I used to live there a long time ago, probably before you were born, but I didn't enjoy that town very much. Good place. Of course, when I lived there, the traffic wasn't quite like it is now. We used to say it took 10 minutes to get downtown, but those days are over, unless it's 3 in the morning or something. Something to that effect. So basically, Chevy, you've been around cars and been a car aficionado your whole life. And that's a good thing. And we've obviously seen car technology change. And are you like me, where you appreciate some of this fancy-dancy stuff, the self-driving Teslas, as I call them, the power door locks, I mean, the Sirius XM radio, the smart cruise control, to the comfortable seats with the 15 different ways you can adjust them. But you also appreciate the 4 on the floor, the 3 on the tree, just where it feels like you're actually driving a car. Any thoughts on that? I mean, would you almost like rather go back in time to the 60s or 70s where it seemed like you were actually driving a car instead of the car driving you?
So, you know, I kind of swing a little both directions on this. I think it's about finding that balance. So I'm around a lot of newer cars on a daily basis. My day job, I'm an automotive body man and painter as a living, for my career living, and then my business stuff's like my side stuff. So I'm around a lot of newer cars at the dealership on a regular basis. We deal with all the newer stuff, but a lot of those Teslas and things, I don't mind them. I've ridden in plenty of them and driven plenty of them. I don't particularly care for electric cars as much as I do the gasoline cars, but you know, it's everybody's got their own thing. But for my personal use, it's something about connecting with a machine that, you know, hearing the engine, feeling the car, even on automatic, like going through the gears. Like, I'm not big on the touch, the push button start cars or the push button drive and all that. I like the actual physical levers and knobs. But I think the technology is really cool. It fascinates me, and I'm intrigued by how it works and how it operates. And I think it's a step in the right direction towards advancing as a civilization and our transportation. I think it has a lot of potential to cut down on accidents and things in the future.
Yeah,
as, you know,
I would tend to agree.
And things.
One thing about a car is safety is by far the most important thing. When you're talking about
Absolutely.
Four wheels on the open road. You know, especially in the Midwest, the weather can change, you know, snap of a finger. We're already kind of seeing time of the year where it seems like it's summer one day and the dead of winter the next, and who knows what may be after that. So you got to be prepared. Certainly the airbags, the better seat belts, the more comfortable seat belts, the stronger frames, and even things that have been around a while like the radial tires and the better shock absorbers, those have made cars safer. And we've seen speed limits become liberalized, as obviously it's not just the speed, it's how safely you can drive that speed, the conditions of the road, etc. And there is a balance.
Right.
I agree. I like these fancy features. I'm intrigued by them as a technology person. But again, I do miss shifting my five on the floor. I've never actually driven a three on the tree. I probably could if I tried. It just seems convenient to have that shifter just to your right there. When in that ergonomic position. And sometimes it seems like the power brakes are a little too powerful. And the power steering, it's like you don't really feel like you're actually moving on the road. But there are safety aspects to that. So you got to have that balance.
Absolutely.
Also, I'm actually a Chevy. You could probably weigh in on this because you've known every vehicle that I've owned since you've known me.
Yeah, right.
As I'm sure you're more than aware, I wrecked my 2014 Nissan Pathfinder Platinum back in January, and, well, I already highlighted this in a previous show, so I'll just say it again. I was also in the process of getting out of a pretty abusive relationship, which left me kind of financially screwed up, so I couldn't just up and go and get another nice fancy vehicle like the one I just wrecked. So I got my 2005 GMC Envoy, but after driving it for a while, I actually started to feel like I liked my 2005 GMC Envoy more than I ever did the Nissan, because the Envoy being a 2005, the Nissan being a 2014, there's almost a 10-year gap there. My 2005 has everything that my 2014 did. It's got the heated and cooled leather seats. It's got the satellite radio. It's got the headrest DVD players. It's got the onboard air compressor and all that fancy stuff, which I thought when I got my Pathfinder, I'm like, oh, this is revolutionary for 2014. And then I go backwards, I guess, into a 2005 model vehicle that already has all the same stuff, and I'm like, was I really missing out?
Yeah. And see, I think that's where I was talking about earlier with the defining balance in the technology. Because you think about it, you got these, like the newer pickup trucks and SUVs, you know, they're going for $80,000 for just a pickup truck now, and the new pickup trucks are set up like Cadillacs. They have all these fancy features and everything. But if you just look back, like, personally, like, I love my old stuff, my 60s, 70s, and 80s cars. But as far as, like, daily driving, I think, for me, my all-time favorite is the early 2000s GMs. I think they really did something right with the level of technology, because you still have your physical knobs, buttons, and things, but then you also have a lot of the creature comforts. You start getting the heated seats and the power seats, and you start getting the more reliable engines that are good on power, and that's where I think that balance comes in. Like you were saying with your Envoy, my Tahoe, my 04 Chevy Tahoe is all-time my favorite daily driver. It has a cloth interior, but it has the Bose sound system, the heavy-duty towing package, so it does everything I need it to do utility-wise. But it's got the really nice, comfortable captain's chairs, and I know it has a reliable engine and transmission setup, not to mention the drivetrain in that vehicle is incredibly cheap and easy to replace or repair. You can have a transmission rebuilt by a local guy for under $2,000. The engines can be had for less than $1,000 as well, used. So it's just a really cheap and easy vehicle to keep on the road, and you get several hundred thousand miles out of it reliably, but also have that comfort factor. So just a really well-balanced vehicle when it comes to that.
I have to agree entirely, and you'll probably laugh at my expense on this one, but one of my favorite things about the Envoy compared to the Pathfinder, when I got the Envoy, obviously I had to transfer over all the stereo equipment that I had installed in the Pathfinder, and with the Pathfinder, it has that crap where the AC controls are integrated into the stereo system, and you literally cannot put an aftermarket head unit in. Meanwhile, with the Envoy, I was able to put in a brand new aftermarket head unit, very nice Kenwood, with a wiring harness, the one little interface box to retain the steering wheel controls, and then otherwise my amplifier and everything, I could just hook right up to the RCA outputs. I didn't need a line-out converter or anything. Like, it was probably one of the most brainless, simple stereo installs I've ever done. Meanwhile, when I had everything put in the Pathfinder, it was such a headache, I paid a shop to do it for me.
Yeah, you see, that's like I said, like that's one of my favorite things about the older ones is like you were saying, mentioned you was comparing your Pathfinder to your Envoy. I can make a similar comparison. You probably remember I briefly had a 2017 Chevy Malibu.
Yeah.
And it was the LS trim package, so it wasn't like fully loaded or anything. It had the cloth interior, just the basics, 1.5 turbo. It was the still had the non CVT transmission in it. But I had a payment on everything, you know. I got bought into the, hey, you should get a newer car, the payment. I'm like, great, I'm getting 40 miles to the gallon, but here I am between insurance and payments paying $600 a month. So I'm like, the savings I had wasn't really financially making sense considering the payments and the insurance I had to pay on the car. But on top of that, this vehicle, it didn't have wireless Android Auto. It had a touchscreen and everything, but it didn't have the wireless Android Auto. It didn't have the Bose sound system. Didn't have a sunroof, it didn't have heated seats. It was just really basic for the amount of money I was paying. And then my other daily driver that I have when I'm not driving the Tahoe is my 07 Impala SS. And yeah, it's terrible on gas. It's a V8, and it's a poor design on GM's part, considering they used a glass transmission behind the V8. But that was a risk I was willing to take when I bought the car. But all things considering, it has the heated leather seats, it has a sunroof. I mean, it's a fully loaded car. And I had less than $4,000 when I bought it. And you know, it's got all the creature comforts I want. And then aside from the touchscreen, but again, a cheap double den with wireless Android Auto, you slap it in the dash, you have your steering wheel control set up, and you have all the same features, if not more, than what that Malibu had. But it's a paid off, cheap car.
I do agree. It is very nice to have a vehicle that is fully paid off. When I bought the Pathfinder, I was still living in Ohio, obviously, and at the time, I wasn't the best off financially, definitely not credit-wise. When I bought it, if I recall correctly, I got my Pathfinder for like $17,900, and it was like a 13.4% interest rate through Ally at the time. I refinanced it after moving out here through Lewis Clark Credit Union for 3.something%, but even then, toward the end of my last relationship, everything was so upside down financially that I could barely keep up on the payments on it. And I'm sure you're fully aware of this, Chevy, because you've known me long enough, but the R52 generation Pathfinders had that dreaded CVT transmission, and in the couple years that I owned my Pathfinder, I fried four of them, and they all got replaced under warranty. It was no cost to me, But every time one of them blew up, it was in the shop for at least a month every time. So I think I could say with a certain level of honesty and not exaggeration that my Pathfinder spent about as much time in the shop as it did in my garage.
See, I think that's a good point you make there with the, you know, the damage of the transmission going out and having to make repairs and things like that. I think also, though, at the same time, that could also be a positive attribute of having a payment. You know, for most people, I'm kind of a odd case where I do all my own work. I don't, you know, take anything to a shop. And I know you do a lot of your own work as well. But the I think for most people, the reality is they simply just don't have the tools or maybe the knowledge or capabilities or even maybe the space to work on their own cars. So that's where I think car payments and things like that, having those newer cars is really beneficial, because you typically think you buy a newer car or a slightly older used car that doesn't have very many miles on it. You know, you can get a warranty with it, and that covers a lot of the issues that may arise. Like you said, you had all your transmissions covered without any without affecting your pockets at all. It's more of a frustration than anything at that point. But I think that's really beneficial to somebody who might be in a financial pinch. I mean, you could argue both ways. You know, you buy a old used car and then you have a catastrophic engine failure, you're going to be out a lot more money than if you buy a newer car and you're making your payments and you got your warranty. And some people just lump that in as their normal monthly expenses. You know, you have your payment, you have your insurance, whatever, and it's just a part of life. But somebody like me, I look at those expenses like, well, if I can fix my own car and I can do it cheap and I know the cars I have, what the parts prices are, like, you won't catch me driving like an Audi or a BMW, something that has like high dollar parts, because I'm the one that's going to have to fix it and repair it. So something that has high dollar parts and it's a high end car, I probably won't own, just simply because I don't want to have to work on it and I don't want to have to buy the parts for it, because I know the parts are expensive. So that's where owning cheaper American older cars comes in handy for me. I know what to expect from pricing for parts are. I know what to expect for how much the labor intensive repair is going to be, depending on what it is. And that's kind of how I decide what I'm going to get myself into. When it comes to old cars, it's just kind of like old cars, 60s, 70s, 80s, kind of free range, because they're kind of like a blank canvas. You can do whatever you want with them, throw whatever drivetrain you want in, and just mix and match it however you feel fits your narrative. But so I think that's where they come in play. But when you're looking for a daily driver quality car and you're somebody that works on your own stuff, I think it's important to look at the cost, quality, and just like, you know, what you're going to look at overhead if something does fail. So like I said, I wouldn't go buy a, you know, freaking Ferrari as my daily driver if I could swing Ferrari prices anyhow, if I knew I was going to have to work on it myself. But again, like I said, if you're buying something new and you have that warranty on it and you know it's going to be covered, you know, you got the powertrain and electrical warranty, then who cares? You know you're covered. It's good to go, and just live your life and enjoy your car or use it as a commuter. Understand not everybody's a car guy. Some people, car is just a mean of transportation, and that's okay too.
So Chevy, actually, in a similar respect to what you just said, what is your thoughts on leasing? I only ask because my dad, he's exclusively owned Toyotas since before I was born, actually. He used to have a salvage title 99 4Runner that he traded in toward his first Tundra that he had leased. And then he had a couple Tundras after that and started getting into the Tacomas. And he would trade them in after the free maintenance, the complimentary maintenance ran out on them. The first vehicle that he's had since before I was born is his current 2019 Tacoma, which he's bought in full. And I've taken over the maintenance on it because he has carpal tunnel. He had to have a spinal fusion surgery a couple years ago, so his neck rotation motion isn't quite there. So I handle all the oil changes and everything. And I remember I was sitting out on the driveway showing him how to do that stupid little cartridge filter that they have on the Tacoma. So I'm like, hey, this is probably your first home oil change in over 20 years, isn't it? He kind of laughed. He's like, actually, yes, it is. But what's your thoughts on leasing?
I think leasing kind of plays into the same kind of mindset for those that would like rent a house or purchasing a home. I think it's a good option, again, for somebody who doesn't necessarily want to do their own maintenance or have to worry about the expenses coming out of their pocket. Because as you mentioned, like, especially when you lease, even more so than like a mortgage, not mortgage, a loaned car with a warranty on it, you know the lease is going to be pretty much covered bumper to bumper. So I think that's a really good option for people who are, again, they don't have that capability of renting on their own, or they're worried about their warranty running out. Because, you know, it happens. You know, you have these 10-year car loans, and there's a good chance you're going to run out of your warranty, especially if you're somebody that drives frequently or racks up a lot of miles. So I think leases are a good option for those that want to know that their car is going to be maintenance and taken care of for at least the time being that they have it. And then when they get tired of it and they're ready for an upgrade, they trade in, you get your new car, and you go about your way and do the same thing over. If the financial aspect isn't impacting your wallet and you can swing it, I don't see why it's a bad option at all for somebody, again, that wants like a point A to point B car. And I know sometimes those lease programs even allow you to buy the car out at the end if you just feel like you have to have the vehicle. I actually worked with somebody that did that. He had a F-150. He ordered it, had it custom ordered and everything, but he did it through a lease. And I thought it was pretty interesting because it was everything he wanted in the truck. He leased it until his leasing agreement ended, and then he opted to buy it and obviously took out like a car loan on it at that point. But so I think it's a good option. I definitely think that's the route a lot of people should go if that's the kind of path they want to take as far as maintenance and repairs go.
Adam here on The Talking Place, WGH Talk Radio, broadcasting through a website of your choice. Hopefully you'll choose WWGH1071.com, because that's where we provide this outstanding radio fabulousness, to put it mildly. Joined here with my regular microphone mate, Mr. Calvin Williams, and a guest to our program talking about cars and how cars have changed, maybe for the good, maybe for the bad. His name is Chevy Sargent. Of course, with a name like that, cars would be the most logical topic. Chevy, we earlier touched on the Teslas, the self-driving cars and battery-operated cars. You said you were not a fan of the electric cars, and why would you say that would be the case?
I think it's all personal preference. So I look at a vehicle, and again, I look at the serviceability on my end. Again, I never want to have to take a car to a shop. I'm really big on the right to repair kind of thing that people always talk about. So like, where manufacturers give the consumer the right to repair their car. And I think a lot of the electric car manufacturers, where they want you to bring it into their specialized shop, which, I mean, I understand, you know, you have high voltage electronics, and it's hazardous, and not to mention it's a liability if somebody's out there working on their Tesla and then it bursts into flames because they did something wrong. So I understand it, but at the same time, I like the fact that manufacturers that allow the consumer to work and do their own repairs at home. And on top of that, being that I've been in electric cars and driven them and things, call me sentimental, but the lack of a soul that I feel that the electric cars have in comparison to my gasoline counterparts is just a little irking to me. I just like, I could be going 50 miles an hour in my 1980 Camaro and it'll feel like 100, but I could be going 150 in an electric car and feel like I'm going 20, if you know what I mean. Because yes, the technology is there, and I mean, they make for an amazing, comfortable ride. But somebody who's a diehard car enthusiast like me, I just yearn for the feel of the road and the vibrations, the bumps, the things that make it imperfect, that make it seem almost human.
Yeah, I guess.
So that kind of connection, yeah. You get. What's that?
We do sacrifice some of that with the newer technology. I have talked about my ride in my friend's Tesla driving through the city on the fully automated mode. It is very smooth. Even over potholes and speed bumps, it does a pretty good job, and it's pretty amazing that actually drives itself. I've never ceased to amaze that they found a way to get this done safely and efficiently. But there really is that balance. We all want cars to be safe, but we also like the feel of the road, feel that we're actually driving the car, not that the car is driving us. And can we find that balance? Well, that would be a discussion that I think people will be pondering for quite some time now.
Absolutely. I also think I always like the kind of hybrid aspect of cars more than the electric. I think every type of vehicle has its place in our world, especially today at the fast-paced world we live in. I think electric cars have their place, gasoline cars have their place, and I think hybrid cars have their place. And I ultimately think that at some point in the future, if we can find a way to more efficiently achieve it, I think a hydrogen electric hybrid would ultimately be a great path for us to move towards a society. If you think like the vehicles they have ran on hydrogen, again, it's incredibly inefficient currently to produce the hydrogen for the vehicle to run on. But if they can successfully produce hydrogen in a mass amount quantity without it becoming incredibly difficult or energy consuming, I think a hydrogen electric hybrid car would be a very, very good path for us to go towards, because you got to have that balance now where you get the extra long range because you have the hybrid engine, you have the hydrogen powered engine, and then you have the electric motor as the assistant there, so you get that additional range of a hybrid, but you don't get the pollutions of a gasoline powered vehicle, being that the byproduct of the hydrogen in cars just water and oxygen.
Good segue. Hydrogen has always been something that I felt would be a great alternative to the fossil fuels, and I think we're just in the infancy of developing this. Maybe we've spent too much time hyping and developing electric cars, where hydrogen might be the way to go. We shall see. Just when you think you figured it out and knew what they were up to, something else pops up on the horizon. And I guess that's part of the fun of just living life and seeing what they introduce. I presume, Chevy, you have been in a self-driving Tesla like I have, and if so, can tell us what you think about the experience.
I think it's pretty fascinating. It's a little scary, you know, knowing that you're not in control. I'm a nervous passenger in general, like just being in somebody else's car while they're driving, like that being out of control kind of mindset just freaks me out in general. So the self-driving aspect definitely is like scary, but it's also like you said earlier, it's really fascinating how it operates and do so in such a safe manner. It's like amazing that what they can do with the technology. I don't know, you know, how they can progress further with that. I mean, I know it's only going to get better, but it almost makes you wonder like what the next 20, 30 years is going to look like if they're even going to have steering wheels to say, because you know, you buy a fully autonomous car 20 years from now, are you even going to have the option to drive or override if the technology gets that good? I know, like, right now, you kind of have to have somebody awake and supervise, and some of the cars even, like, track your eye movements and make sure your hand's in place of the wheel and things. So I know they have those safety features in place, but the technology is only going to get better, especially with the uprise of AI and how that's, I'm sure, is going to be integrated in these cars in the next coming years, so I feel like there's a lot of potential for it to improve, but me personally, I'm still a little freaked out by it.
Yeah, I like to be in control too. I definitely am a nervous passenger. I'm used to being a driver 99% of the time, so it's like when you are in the self-driving Tesla, nobody's really the driver. It does track the person's eye movements, but, I mean, my friend took his hands off the wheel. His feet were not on the pedals. It's driving itself like a robot. It's pretty crazy, but it seems fairly safe. I mean, can this AI be a safer driver than a human being? Plus, the car can even be driverless for a small period of time. If you're like a block away and it's parked on the street, you're at a bar or restaurant, it'll come pick you up like a valet, which is quite fascinating to say the least. Literally, it would be a driverless car. I did watch as it parallel parked. Most people, including myself, are not really fans of parallel parking, but it does a really good job, which I'm quite fascinated by. So, as much as I understand and know about technology, even I am cease to be amazed by some of this stuff. So it's cool, it's fascinating, and if it's in the interest of safety and getting things done efficiently, sure. But of course, I still enjoy the idea of, as you've said, the feel of the road, being behind the wheel, the old-fashioned driving experience, and can we actually balance that? I guess we shall see. Calvin, I guess you had some more things to bring up. I mean, you're a car person, so we could spend a week on this, but we wanted to go through some of the thoughts that run through our brains at the present time.
Actually, yes, I've got a good one. This just came to mind as we've been doing this show. I know Adam, Chevy, I think I've told you both this in the past, but when it comes to hybrids, if I was able to get one somewhat affordably, I would not mind something like a Chevy Volt for a commuter car, because it primarily runs off the batteries and then it uses the gasoline engine to recharge the batteries, if I'm not mistaken. But in respect to hybrid technology and technology in general when it comes to internal combustion engines, it's no secret that diesels are generally regarded as more efficient. You get more energy per liter of fuel. If one exists, I've never heard of it, but how come we don't have diesel hybrids?
You know, I think they, I don't know, I can't speak because I haven't really done research on that, but I've kind of had similar thoughts in the past. I'm assuming if they do, they're probably more popular in Europe, being that I know Europe uses a lot more diesel cars over, like, yeah, petrol cars, as they'd refer to them over there. So I know it's super, super common, like, a lot, especially with, like, Volkswagens and things that run on diesel. You get the diesel TDI, like, Jettas and things. So they probably do. I just don't think it's in our realm of vehicles. I think the U.S. is a lot more gasoline-dependent than we are diesel. So I think it hasn't been really a popular selling point if they have developed it, or maybe it's something, I don't know, some kind of issue with the systems collaborating. I don't know. I don't know exactly why they haven't, but that does make sense. I think that would be a good call.
I mean, I feel like if they release diesel hybrids in the U.S., especially because a lot of hybrid owners specifically buy them for the fuel savings, if you have that additional efficiency of it being a diesel on top of it being a hybrid, I feel like dealerships wouldn't be able to keep them in stock.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, you can say, like, well, the price of diesel's higher. I mean, that's true, but the savings you have, like you said, the energy in comparison, that's just like the comparison people make a lot to, like, E85 versus gasoline. E85 is usually, like, up to, like, a dollar or more cheaper per gallon than gasoline, and especially over here in the Midwest, you're throwing these Sheetz gas stations up everywhere, and E85 is just readily available. I can go 5 miles in each direction and find a Sheetz, so it's very tempting to fill up with E85, but then you look at the actual math of it, I can't remember what it is, but it takes a greater amount of E85 to generate the same amount of energy as gasoline. So you actually, that's why flex fuel vehicles, so actually my Tahoe, mentioned earlier, is actually a flex fuel Tahoe. And the way that it accommodates E85 is the injectors actually have a greater flow rate for when it has an alcohol content sensor built in. And when the alcohol content sensor detects a greater amount of alcohol in the fuel system, the injectors actually increase the fuel rate. Something in the tune allows for a greater amount of fuel to be added to compensate for the greater needed E85 to burn the same amount of energy as, like, gasoline. So you're actually consuming faster than you would, like, gasoline. I think diesel probably plays in the same kind of field there. You need less diesel than you would gasoline to get the same amount of energy. So I think you're exactly right with that.
Well, so I'm sure you remember this. Shortly after I moved out here a couple of years ago, I was actually toying with the idea of converting my Pathfinder to a flex-fuel vehicle, because there's plug-and-play kits you can get off the shelf with the injectors and the sensor and everything to convert the VQ35DE engine to a flex-fuel motor, pretty much the same as you would find in a Nissan Frontier truck at the time. The only reason I ultimately didn't go through with it was because the closest gas station to me that serves E85 is in Boise, which is a 6-hour drive one way, which, I mean, that's beyond counterproductive at that point already.
I feel bad for the the drag strip guys out there, like the Remy 85, I can only imagine what they're doing for fuel setups. They might be going to straight alcohol or just having to run like $100.
Oh, so there's actually a local oil distributor here in town that does like commercial accounts and whatnot. They serve the bulk oil to all the dealerships for their giant storage tanks, but they have 55-gallon barrels of ethanol that you can purchase, and I don't even want to know how much one of them costs, but they do offer that as an option for the people around here that are fortunate enough to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a diehard, you feel like you need E85, I guess more power to you, but that's like that's a whole other level of commitment there, buying a gallon.
Yeah.
55-gallon drum, and you'd have to worry about using it before it runs bad as well.
Right.
Yeah, so like I said, I think there's benefits to all of it. The flex fuel, you got your flex fuel vehicles, your hybrids, your electrics, your gasoline vehicles. I'll tell you one thing, though, that one of the biggest selling points for me always with gasoline is to be able to just jump in any one of my gas cars and go cross country and not have to worry about the time it's going to take me to recharge. As you probably know, I just, for my honeymoon trip, my wife and I pulled our camper halfway across the country to Texas, and it's 1300 miles one direction, 1300 miles back. Plus we put about 400 miles on it while we were down there. That was a hefty fuel bill, I will tell you, but you know, at the same time, it's like the amount of time I would have spent charging on the way there had I had an electric vehicle. It just outweighs the benefit, I feel like, because I got there, I was taking it pretty slow and steady on my way in. It ran me about 36 hours on the way into Texas. It says 19, GPS is 19 and a half. That's if you have no stops and everything goes perfect. Took me about 36 hours on the way in, pulling a 5,000-pound camper, you know, with me, my wife, and dogs all stopping for pee breaks and gas stops and food. So it wasn't too bad. On the way home, on the other hand, I kind of cannonball runned it and got home in 26 hours, so not a bad trip overall. And it's like I said, that fuel is definitely not cheap, but at the same time, like I said, I feel like that would be a struggle. And that's, like I said, one of the selling points for gasoline cars for me is the fact that I can just jump in and fill up at any station within a 10-mile radius.
Well, as my mama always said, time flies when you're having fun. Can you believe it, guys? It's about time to say goodbye after another outstanding and scintillating experience of radio broadcasting and fabulousness, discussing cars and how they're integrated into people's lifestyles, hybrids, hydrogen, diesel, and some other fun stuff. Chevy Sargent from southwest side of the Columbus area, thank you for joining us. And Calvin from Idaho, always a pleasure to have you sharing the microphone. Any final words, gentlemen?
I think I had a great conversation with you guys today, and I appreciate you having me on.
No problem. We appreciate your knowledge and your expertise, and always a laugh or two. That's the most important part. Calvin, you can email at calvin@wwgh1071.com. And yours truly, my addy for Adam, is adam@wwgh1071.com.